Let's find out what our committee's name is. The Senate Committee on Education and General Government. And you're all asking yourselves, what do those two have in common? We don't yet know, other than we are trying to reduce the number of committees that we had this session, so we put those two subject areas into one. I'm very pleased to work on behalf of the Senate and the Senate President on trying to achieve the goals that we will have set out for this committee. I don't yet know what areas of general government we will be working on, so any of you out there wondering what we're going to work on, we don't yet know either. So, because there are a couple of different committees that will be sharing some of these duties. But we do all know what education means, so I'm glad to have you here. I'm Vicki Walker, your chair. I'm a senator from Eugene. Very glad to be back. And I'll have my other committee introduce themselves in just a moment. I do want to let you know that I received a memo yesterday in our training about the Oregon Channel pilot project this session, and we have a new channel for people to access the activities of the legislature. But one of the things that I read in here that's going to make many of you unhappy, as those of you who've been in my committee before know, you have to turn off your cell phone, or at least put it on vibrate, because if I hear it go off, you will be writing a check to the Common School Fund. But let me, and I'll remind you at the beginning of each hearing, so there's no excuses for you to tell me that you didn't hear my reminder. But what this notation says is ask everyone in a hearing room to turn off all wireless devices such as BlackBerries, pagers, and cell phones because they interfere with the sound system even in silent mode. So, unfortunately, I'll have to ask you to turn them off. I know I was a culprit of that one day. I had my BlackBerry on silent up here, and it kept making the sound system make funny noises. So I found out the hard way. We will be adopting our rules in a moment. Senator Metzger has joined us. Senator Westland will not be joining us today. He's on a road trip with the governor, so he'll be back with us next week. So I will start by introducing our committee administrator, Dana Richardson. Dana is from Washington State, one of Governor Gregoire's three policy advisors for the last 18 months, Dana. And we are just absolutely delighted to have her join us. And Heather Gravel. I love Heather's last name because that's my mother's maiden name, Gravel. So we're glad to have Heather back with us. And then I have as my vice chair, Senator Jeff Cruz. So why don't you tell the folks where you're from and why you want to be on this committee?
Oh, thank you. These mics are really hot, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
Okay. That's good to know. We can't even whisper, I guess.
Well, that's exactly what it says here. Never conduct a side conversation and do not use indecent language. So... That is your admonition.
That's more an issue for the House, I think, Senator.
okay.
I'm Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1, which is part or all of Douglas, Jackson, Josephine, Coos, and Curry counties. I was on Senator Walker's committee last session and requested this committee and because we did some good work. And I'm very pleased to be back working with you again, Senator.
Thank you, and I did appreciate your contribution to the committee last session, and we'll be revisiting some of the things we worked on before, and I'll be pleased to have you here with your knowledge about that. So we'll start out next with the other side down there, Senator Morse.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I represent District 8, which is the city areas of Lynn and Benton counties. Philomath, Corvallis, Millersburg, Albany, and Adair Village, and Tangent. Those are the incorporated cities. My previous history has been mostly focused in ways and means during the regular session, and I'm really looking forward to participating on the education policy as well as the education subcommittee of ways and means. And I think that there's a lot of wisdom on the part of our president in trying to develop greater linkages between policy and fiscal. And I'm just delighted to be here and looking forward to a productive session. So thank you.
You're welcome. Senator Metzger.
Rick Metzger, and I represent Senate District 26, which is the area on Hood River, east Clackamas County, a small portion of Multnomah County around the Mount Hood area. Very interested in and excited about serving on the Education General Government Committee this year. Actually, the first time, Madam Chair, that I've actually served on the Education Committee. And this is a, I think, a natural follow-up to the great time that we had, and we'll be talking about momentarily, co-chairing with Senator Deckert, the Senate Special Commission on Educational Excellence, and following through with those recommendations that are coming to this committee and some other committees during the course of the session. And looking at the opportunities that we can to give our kids, you know, the kind of education that we talk about, and will, you know, help build Oregon and retain our best and brightest for the new century.
Great. And I assume you stayed down here last night, so you didn't have to navigate the snow.
I did.
Senator Metzger lives up where it snows a lot.
And it is there, I understand.
Yes, and actually I'm from Eugene, and my husband called this morning. We have 3 inches of snow on the ground just in town, so my puppy is delighted this morning. All right, so we are going to be adopting the rules here in a moment, and then I want to jump into the calendar, colleagues, and just let you know what we're thinking. You have the rules in front of you. Dana sent them out to you yesterday. They're pretty standard. I'm not going to have her go through all 16 points of them. Do any of you have any questions?
Work session.
I'm sorry, what?
Don't we need to go into a work session?
No, to adopt the rules.
Madam Chair, I move adoption of the rules.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the adoption of our proposed rules. Do I hear any discussion about that? Okay, if not, I suppose we need to do the aye thing. Okay, good. We're all out of a little rusty, so we're getting a little practice. In fact, we left someone off the agenda today, and so I'll talk about that in a minute. With no objection, then the proposed rules will now become permanent. Thank you. Okay, the next thing I'd like to talk to you about, committee, is our calendar that's in front of you. It's not out there as a public document yet. It is just for you to look at, to remind you that we do meet every Tuesday and Thursday. We will have some Friday meetings. Please note that we are scheduled for a road meeting on January 26th. I believe February 23rd. I've not made any decisions about where we're going to go on the road, so I wouldn't mind hearing your input and seeing what you would like to do. Given the weather this time of year, it may be a little tricky going across the mountain, but I'm up for whatever the committee would like to do. I have met with a couple of you just, actually all of you, just briefly to talk about what your goals are for this committee, and we can have further conversations about that. But do get that on your agenda. I indicated to the Senate President, because he gave me 2 committees in one, that I also would probably want to meet on an occasional Friday to try to get the workload done. I wasn't told that that was a for sure thing, but that is a possibility, so just I'll let you know in advance when we're going to need to do that. Also on the front page there, you'll see some notes about possible issues that we're going to be going over in terms of education on this committee. This is not an inclusive list at all, or exclusive. I mean, it is just some thoughts that I put down when I sat down with Ms. Richardson to talk about what our committee would do. So please do not hesitate to talk to me about issues that you think we should be talking about. I'll be sending a letter out to the Republican caucus as well to ask if there are any priorities of their members that are not on this committee. So any questions before we get down to our agenda? All right. The first thing we have on our agenda then is to gavel in the informational meeting. So we've done that, and I need to really pull up on that gavel. I like banging it. Yeah, there used to be a really big one in here. I like that one. So we have now gaveled in. We're going to go into our informational meeting. What is not on the agenda was the, you'll notice a glaring omission, the community colleges. We just sort of Didn't get that one in there. So we'll be talking with the community colleges after the governor's office presentation. So first up, we're going to talk about the Senate Commission on Educational Excellence. Senator Metzger, and I think Senator Deckert might be here. Do you want to step down with Paul Warner from Revenue and give us an overview? I did serve on that committee, as did Senator Cruz, but I think it's important for everyone here to know what great work that commission did and what the bill drafts were. And I would like to say we don't have any bill drafts yet for this committee, but I anticipate that what the commission did will be coming our way. So with that, I'll turn it over to you two gentlemen.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Again, Rick Metzger, State Senator, District 26, co-chair of the Senate Commission on Educational Excellence. My understanding is that Senator Deckert won't be here. I've got the call that that I am to do this myself, and somehow I'm just not surprised by that at all. But but happy to do so with Paul here. I want to give you what I'm going to do is, Madam Chair, is give you just an overview of why the commission was formed, the type of input that we had in the course of the commission, the targeted areas that we looked at, and then I'll ask Paul to run through the specific recommendations that the commission has pre-session filed, and as you mentioned, the majority of which will be coming to this committee, if not all at one point, through the system.
And it looks like Paul needs to plug himself in here before
Paul
he
needs to plug
uses juice.
All right. I love technology. Not only is the is Mr. Warner the expert on revenue, he also is the technical genius and other duties as required.
Revenue and IT, that's quite a double, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Impressive.
The password is incorrect. That happened to me this morning.
This one.
Well, while he's working on that, I'm just
yeah, why don't you go ahead?
Catch up. First of all, about the members of the commission. We discussed with Senator Courtney, the Senate President, last winter about the commission and the type of input that we wanted. And I think we did, if certainly not unique, but not often utilized, put together a commission that was not just of the body of the Senate, but also of the public and the voices that we thought would be very, very critical on the issues we're discussing going forward in the Senate. And now we're up. And you can see on the left the members of the Oregon Senate, what Senator Cruz and Senator Walker were a member of as well. From the citizens, we appointed with equal voting power in our commission, which was really an exciting time to have that balance to our work. Alan Bruner, who was the Oregon Teacher of the Year a couple of years ago as a high school teacher from Colton. Kelvin Calkins, who is a grade school teacher in Hood River. Jerry Colonna, the superintendent of the Beaverton School District. Anita Olson, president of the Oregon PTA. Gretchen Pierce, a very successful businesswoman in Eugene. Lorenzo Poe, who's long been an activist for educational excellence in the Portland area. And Bill Thorndike, past president of the Oregon Business Council and very, very active in advancing educational issues as perceived by the business community. And I will say, first of all, as you are well aware, Madam Chair, everybody worked exceptionally hard in the commission. They took the work very, very seriously. And the product I believe that we are starting with reflects how hard that commission worked. The work groups, what we identified is, as you know, when you talk about education, it's there's a plethora of areas that can be explored and should be explored. But to be successful, we really wanted to identify and get our arms around some key areas and move that agenda forward, rather than trying to have that 40,000 and try to do a little thing with everything and essentially not move anywhere. And so we looked at three major areas of which the bills that will be coming to this committee contain. The first was that investments in early childhood education were critical. And I think we have all heard through our course in the Senate that among all the great investments that can be made, that early intervention generally produces, and the statistics show this, the best and most important results. So if we're already going to make limited investments, because we never have enough money to do everything we want to do, let's put those dollars where we're going to have the greatest impact. And so we really wanted to hone in on early childhood education. The second part was to make sure that the services that we're delivering, that not only are those services and the outcomes accountable to the general public as well as all of those who are involved in the educational system, but also make those delivery systems as efficient as possible, recognizing that best practices aren't easily to get our arms around, and yet they are out there. We have to find a way to identify those and be able to disseminate that information so everyone can benefit from that. And the third was a recognition that our capital fund for our educational system is in dire straits. And local communities, especially because of different tax bases around the state, are even hit harder by that. Certainly older school districts continue to get further and further behind in maintaining their capital infrastructure, especially with the recession that we had a few years ago, and then discretion had to be made to put money into operating to maintain programs. And so, again, capital improvements and repairs went further and further down the list. And then certainly in high-growth districts. You know, how do we pay for the bricks and mortar of our educational system? And can the state play a role in that in assisting local communities? So those were the three general areas, Madam Chair, that we chose to address. And we recognized what was really important was not just the policy, but to be able to identify potential funding sources so that there's really teeth behind the work of the commission, not a pie in the sky, that we could actually look at, yes, this is how much this is going to cost, and here are some ways that we can actually make that. And then what our role will be in this committee and the legislature as a whole now is decide if, in fact, the priorities that we have identified are the priorities of this legislature and of the state, and then move that forward. And with that, Madam Chair, I think I'd turn over to Paul to discuss the specific outcomes that we had that will be coming to the committee in the bill forms that will be are listed in the back of your packet.
Okay. And, gentlemen, I'll remind you that we're going to go with this presentation until 9:05, so you have 15 minutes to just give us the overview, because I anticipate we'll go into depth on these things.
Paul is very quick.
They come.
And the advantage, well, at least two of the three of you have heard this, so.
Right. All right. Mr. Warner, would you please identify yourself for all those out in TV land?
Okay. Madam Chair, Paul Warner, Legislative Officer.
Thank you.
The next few slides kind of summarize what the work groups have put together, and then I do have a final slide that shows the legislative concepts that were introduced by the Commission as pre-session filed bills. Investments in early childhood education, there are three components, and these were prioritized, fully fund Head Start being one of them. The second being voluntary full-day kindergarten, and these two investments are recommended to be included in the 07-09 budget. And there's a finance package with that as well. The third is to establish a path to reduce grade 1 through 3 class size due to the cost, over $200 million a biennium, and some of the likely capital needs as well. The work group and the full commission felt that this was something that should be done, should be phased in over a series of biennia, and a recommended movement in that direction, certainly by the 09-11 biennium. The funding sources that were identified, the commission had looked at a new corporate minimum tax. That, of course, that legislative concept will have to be introduced in the House, and we anticipate that being introduced through the House Revenue Committee. There was a local school district requirement that pertained to the full-day kindergarten. The recommendation was a 3-to-1 ratio or 25% for a local match. And the way the bill is drafted, that can come from any revenue source. So it could come from the budget, the state school fund, or local revenue that's part of the formula operating revenue. The other element is keeping our fingers crossed that the current revenue forecast for general fund and lottery holds up, then some incremental growth should be there. That's particularly true in 2009-11 when the effects of the kicker are not present as they are in 2007-09. Accountability work identified a school district efficiency review process and developed a bill that would set up that process that would really try to make this a system that would be a benefit to the districts themselves and look at those districts that have carried out management activities that have proven to be successful and find a way to get that information to other districts and set up a system through the Department of Education that can transmit that information, have review teams, and have that information available to districts that need it. The idea is to make this a positive kind of source of information for those districts rather than any kind of an old-style auditing process. Modify the school improvement fund. We do have the school improvement fund statute that has been on the books since 2001. That was funded for just one fiscal year and then dropped during the recession. The work group had a number of recommendations bringing that up to date. And in order to look at the particular investments or list of investments, the emphasis there is on the early childhood recommendations that were part of that work group. The final is to move toward a transparent education budgeting process, and this has been advocated by Oregon Business Council and others, and this didn't require a statute, but the recommendation of the work group is to try to move in that direction. School Capital Fund, we'll establish the Capital Fund. There was a definition of capital that we found in the statute that the work group was comfortable with, and that was put into the bill. It's really somewhere in between the very restrictive Measure 5 definition of capital and a very loose definition that was used for the lottery bonds in 97 and 99. Allocate funds on a matching basis with a different match rate dependent on the assessed value per student. The lower the assessed property value per student, the lower the match rate required in the local district. And then the work group also talked about a variety of revenue sources, recognizing for capital fund is a good place for revenue sources that are sporadic, one-time kinds of revenue sources, and recommending that some of those be looked at. And the Education Stability Fund, for example, has a 5% cap. Money will begin flowing into that capital fund under current law. Changes in the tax collection process. There is a property tax collection process bill that's included. Corporate kicker, there's a bill to repeal the corporate kicker or to send that to voters for a repeal of the corporate kicker and put that in the capital fund. Group proposal interaction. These proposals work together, and the main a recognition was that the early childhood investments should be rolled into the school improvement fund proposal, and those ended up being in the same bill. The capital fund, there's also a recognition that if you're going to require these lower class sizes, more capital is going to be needed. A reminder, our quality education model cost estimates don't include capital costs. So the commission package is designed to accomplish these goals as Senator Metzger laid out. And the bills that were designed to do that, that's a little small, but you've got those in front of you. That's a series of bills that will be going to various committees, and I'm assuming several will end up here initially. But these are basically the work group proposals that were endorsed by the commission as a whole and were introduced as bills, all except the last one. As I mentioned, the corporate minimum tax will come through the House Revenue Committee. Happy to answer any questions on those bills or anything else.
Any questions from the committee? Okay.
Maybe just comment.
Okay,
And just for those in the audience, because we did do this in work groups. Senator Walken and I served on the same work group, and so the work groups kind of worked independently of the commission. In fact, the commission didn't meet for an extended period while the work groups were doing the work. And the commission had general consensus that this package of bills was a very good starting point I don't think everybody was in agreement with everything in them, but we were all in agreement that this was a good package to introduce to begin the discussion here in this body. So,
and I would agree with that, and I would also not be surprised if there were other people in the Capitol looking at some of those revenue sources that we identified.
I think the corporate one has been spent 10 times.
I think so. After our meeting yesterday, it turns out everyone has their eye on the prize. Okay. Well, I appreciate the work of the commission. I really do. And Senator Metzger, I'm glad you pointed out all the citizen participation on that. I thought that was really a benefit to us to have that. And I think we came up with some good work. We identified some really important things that we can do, and I'm really hopeful that we can move forward. My area was the accountability area, and I'm, of course, very excited that we might be able to do something with the school improvement fund. I just don't like things in statute that are just sitting there. And we had some good work from the Portland Public School District on that issue with accountability block grants, and I want to acknowledge their work in helping us with that. So I will look forward to hearing more from you as our bills come this way and we start working on them.
Well, thank you. And as you know, some of our public members are very excited about continuing their service by coming in and advocating and for their work and using their expertise again before this committee as to why the conclusions were reached. So,
yes, Senator, that's a good point, because as we develop, as the bills are introduced and sent to our committee, it would be nice to have some members of the commission come and testify about those positions. Okay, great. Well, thank you both.
Thank you.
And Senator Metzger, we'll have you join us back up here, and we're ahead of schedule. Ooh, I like that.
We've got an ad to make, so that's probably going to work well.
Oh, we have an ad to make?
Well,
oh, yes, yes, that's right. Thank you. Okay, we're going to have Mr. Warner pull up stakes there in a moment as he shuts down his computer, and then the next folks we're going to hear from are the State Board of Education, and I believe we have the chair of that board here with us, Jerry Berger, and it looks like Jerry brought along some help. Mr. Berger, why don't you introduce yourself and tell us what you guys have been up to? It's been a lot of work.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Berger. I'm the chair of the State Board of Education, and I welcome the opportunity to give you an overview of what the State Board has been doing since the last session and some of our plans for this upcoming session. First of all, and you all are experienced, but the State Board is responsible for K through 12 and community colleges. So we oversee the policies from kindergarten through high school, first 2 years of baccalaureate degrees, professional technical education, certificates, degrees, and adult basic skills. The State Board depends on the State Superintendent of Public Instruction and the Commissioner of Community Colleges to do the work and make sure that the policies we adopt and the efforts throughout the state are accomplished. The State Board, if you're not aware, there's seven members. There are five and one from each congressional district and two at large. We presently have six members of the State Board, and there is a vacancy. I forget which area it is. But we are looking, I know the governor's office is looking to get someone appointed to this, to that position. The overall vision of the state board is each student demonstrates the knowledge and skills necessary to transition successfully to their next steps, advanced learning, work, and citizenship. One of the major things the state board has started on is the fact that we must have conversations throughout the education enterprise. That means K through 12, community colleges, and the state system of higher education. So we have done a lot of work, which I'll get into briefly, which some of you have seen this past session, of making sure that transition of students from one level to the other makes some sense, and students know what's, what are expected of them, and they know that if they do certain things, they have a better chance of succeeding and being successful at the next level. The key things we've been working on this past year, and actually these are things we're going to be doing in the upcoming year, new high school graduation requirements. We have undertaken a huge review of what other states have adopted and are doing. We have asked for input for over the last 14, 15 months of input on discussions we've had on graduation requirements, what people think ought to be in them, what isn't accurate, what isn't adequate, what should be added, and as you can imagine, there are a multitude of opinions regarding the high school graduation requirements. And if you are a nuclear physicist, and that is your field, you have some expectations of what a student should have when they graduate from high school to do and enter that field. And that probably would include a lot of science and a lot of mathematics. If you're going into nursing, there might be another set of skills that are required. If you're going to be a welder, there may be another set of skills. So setting the high school graduation requirements in the state is not easy and doesn't necessarily meet every individual employment or educational goal. But that's what we've been wrestling with. We are close to agreeing as a board what ought to be in the new graduation requirements. There's a handout there, which is a draft of November, I believe, which obviously outlines some of our thinking. Some of that has changed. On high school graduation requirements, I would say we, as you know, you adopted, the legislature adopted, a new unit in writing English and a new unit in mathematics. We are thinking of adding, those will be added, and also re-adding a unit in science in the new graduation requirements. The other thing that we are undertaking is what should those units consist of? In other words, 3 years of mathematics could be, in the present system, could be 3 years of basic mathematics. Is that what we want for a graduation requirement? So far, the state board is saying, no, that probably is not what we expect in the 3 years of high school mathematics. So we're trying to, we are defining, we're in the process of discussing and defining what that ought to be. Right now in the high school graduation requirements, it would be a base level probably of Algebra 1, and then 2 years that is above Algebra 1, and then you get into the argument, is it Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, et cetera, and we're discussing that, and I will find out this week if we have agreement on what that ought to be. Many states have adopted Algebra 2 as a requirement. Also, many states have backed off of that requirement when it gets to the fact are students graduating or not. If you talk to the business community, they have some needs. If you look at the job occupations, everyone doesn't need Algebra 2. So that's one of the big issues we're discussing. Actually, it's next Thursday and Friday at the state board meeting. But we're close. We've gotten hundreds of input on that. And I think we have a package close to completion, but I don't know where we will be because I'm one member, and we will see where we get on Thursday and Friday. But that's been exciting work. Other exciting work has been working with the State Board of Education, with the State Board of Higher Education. We have a committee called the Unified Education Enterprise, where we have looked at K through 20, where we're looking at how our students are transitioning, what's working, what do they need to know. You may be interested to know. We have more credit for college classes now that students are getting in high school than ever before. We have more people in high school taking advanced placement tests. In fact, through the emphasis of Senate Bill 342, we have agreement in the state now that advanced placement scores mean the same thing in all of our public institutions in the state. If you get a 3 in physics, it means this number of credits in all the community colleges and the university systems. Excellent work by the community college and the chancellor's office on getting those things accomplished. We are aligning majors. We're looking at pathways. If you want to become a nurse, which is a focus we've looked at, pathways, we have the pathways for the high school student, what they need to know, the community college student, what they need to take, and the university system if they want a 4-year degree. And we're focusing also on engineering. We're focusing on education. Those are 3. And we're also looking at apprenticeship, which is a very important one for our certain trades and actually very good skills. So we have a pathways that we're working on trying to work that out. The earlier presentation, there's really a lot of overlap of what we're talking about. We have the same goals, which is we want students to be successful. We want students to look at where they want to go, and we want to give them ways to get there. It's not fair for us to adopt graduation requirements and then not have a system that starts in K and works through so students know where they are. It's explained to them where they need to get to them and their parents, and then they have choices to make, which is, yes, I'm willing to do the work. I'm not willing to do the work. That's too rigorous for me. I don't want to do that. But we need to make that obvious to parents and students that what they do has impact on what their future career choices are. In the high school graduation requirements, I want to emphasize a couple of things. When we started looking at them, we tried to build off the good work our schools have been doing since the act in the early 90s regarding schools. There are some really good concepts in there. They have worked in many ways, and we have built off that. Obviously, staffing, obviously resources, all of those things enter into the picture on how much we can do, but I think we're getting very, very close on the high school graduation requirement. We are asking in the high school graduation requirement, the present one, that students do need to focus on where do they want to go. That isn't meaning they have to make a career decision in grade 9, but they need to look at the future in order to have focused education. Focused learning makes sense. To many students, theoretical learning makes no sense because they don't know how to apply it. I might highlight, I don't need to do it, but in the Senate Bill 342, which was worked on throughout the education enterprise, we are working then on advanced credits placement testing. We have that done for now, but if there's new changes in testing, none of this sometimes is finished. We have faculty and community colleges in the state system higher ed working on general ed outcomes for the 24 colleges and universities to agree upon. We have the Oregon Transfer Module, which is the first year of college that will be transferable totally to, if a student went to the community college, it would transfer to the university system. And we are looking at better aligning our general education outcomes through community colleges and university system. That's kind of an overview of what we're doing. Your board has been very active on these issues. We have not waited for anyone to tell us that is what we should do. Senate Bill 342 was helpful to get us focused. The high school graduation requirements, the input we've gotten throughout the state is, yes, they need to be modified. Yes, they need to be perhaps a little more rigorous. But yes, they need to take a look at the individual student and what he or she wants to do in their future. So those are some of the concepts. Another major concept the board believes in is the student comes first. Oftentimes, when boards and boards talk about it, they worry about institutions. Our focus is on what happens to the student. Community colleges, that would be money. The concept of funding formula, money follows the students. Money doesn't necessarily go to individual institutions. So you might hear some of that about what's happening in funding formula. Our concept is where the students are, money ought to be where the students. That's also through K through 12. Money does follow the student, and the funding should be there for that student wherever he or she resides. With that, I would open, I could go on and on because we've had an aggressive agenda. We've had a board very, very committed to these things, and we are very much in agreement that students come first and that we must work among each other in education in order to meet our required ends. With that, I'd open up for questions.
Great. Mr. Berger, I appreciate your comments. Let me just ask a couple of things that maybe some folks who are listening don't know. It's my understanding that you all are appointed by the governor, and so that one vacancy that's open is open for anyone to make application to the governor's office to serve.
Jan, what region is open?
Congressional District 3, Portland area.
Okay. So any of you out there listening that are interested in serving on the board should contact the governor's appointments secretary and try to executive appointments and try to get yourself as considered for this post. And I've had some conversations with some superintendents about the discussions you've all had. Some of them were a little concerned because your deadline was pretty close. I think you had a cutoff in December of talking about the new requirements and that you've all extended that deadline. Is
yes,
that correct?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we had a timeline that we were going to adopt the new requirements in December. We modified that timeline because we had like 300 to 400 meetings throughout the state in the fall gathering information.
Okay.
And we have analyzed that information. We have gotten that input. And there's still, we're getting input today. We will get input on the high school graduation requirements. So we extended that. We have it as an action item in January. I haven't talked to the, I'm one member of the board. I'm not quite sure where we will be, but we're very, very close. The outline and what's we agree probably 95% of that. I could tell you my opinions regarding where we don't agree. And when I say we don't agree, it's a nuance of agreement. But mathematics is probably the best example.
Mm-hmm.
Some people believe that the mathematics should be Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, Calculus, which would no doubt would be very good for the student pursuing the university degree. Throughout the country, mathematics has been a stumbling block for student success. So we have gotten a lot of input regarding mathematics of our students can't reach that, won't reach that, use whatever you want. That's an area. I'm one board member that believes if we required Algebra 2 as a graduation requirement, we would not be serving a large population of the people we have in our high schools. That's my opinion. Algebra 2 isn't the answer. It's the how do you use mathematical concepts for where you want to work and what do you need to know. Many, many occupations do not require Algebra 2. And so that's been a discussion. The good thing about the discussion, it's been wide open. It's been the board is not into I must be right or I must be wrong. It's struggling with that. But we've gotten a lot of input regarding mathematics. The other area we've gotten a lot of input on is our science, adding a year of science, which then might have impact on, they say, professional technical programs. If the math requirement and the science requirement, this is one board member speaking, is the traditional college-bound curriculum, my viewpoint is that may not be good for our high school graduates. That's my opinion. We are looking at the fact that you give schools some options regarding the math and the science. For example, it could be ag science. It might be computer science. It doesn't have to be biology, chemistry, physics. So that's the discussion we're going to have in January, and we're going to define that. Some school districts want it. You tell me what to do. Some want us never to tell them anything, and you have all in between. So that those are probably the two most contentious issues. And when I say contentious, that's not even strong. Well-meaning people think you ought to have that. But our Oregon public high schools serve a variety of learners with a variety of career choices and goals. We want to increase the rigor and at the same time not discourage people so they just drop out more and they don't see any relevance to their learning. And hopefully we're going to come up with a graduation that will be reasonable for the for our times, will make us competitive, and that's what we're trying to work on.
And I'll turn it over to my committee in a minute, and I agree with you. Those are the two sticking points that I've heard as I have talked to superintendents. They're very concerned, especially about the math component. They just don't feel they're going to have as many graduates because you're not going to count that lower level math class, and then they're going to be in math all 4 years. Also in House Bill 3129 that we passed last session, we did increase the graduation credits that are required. You're now required to have 24, though some districts were already at 24, some were at 27. So that was actually my addition to that bill. I would ask you also what the state board decides about graduation requirements. Does the legislature have anything to say about it, or is that what you're charged with doing? And when you make this decision, that's what we'll be doing. Let me also remind you that SIM and CAM is also in the statute. That is part of the statute. So are these requirements that you're working on here taking the place of SIM, CAM, or why don't you give us a little background about that?
Chair Walker, members of the committee, wonderful question. The state board has in its authority, we can adopt the high school graduation requirements. Obviously, if the legislature wants to get into that arena and wants to have input on that and wants to do that, you have the right to do that. If we adopt the graduation requirements, we would be coming back to dealing with, we would have to deal with the SIM and CAM, which is in statute, and address the elimination of that, and I need to be careful of those terms, because in the new graduation requirement, and most people when they talk about SIM and CAM, none of you I know don't really know what they're talking about. They're buzzwords and they get people excited. That's just a poor volunteer retired guy. That's my opinion.
That's right.
We are taking the best aspects of SIM and CAM, and instead of having, if we adopt the new graduation requirements, we're going to take the best aspects of those and build them into the high school diploma. So there are not separate certificates. It's part of a whole, because there's some very important concepts in there that we want. So when we adopt, which is under our purview, the graduation requirements, then we obviously have to come to the legislature to change what is in statute regarding what the graduation requirements are. Then we have implementation schedules, because you, Arts, the graduation requirements we're looking at, we can't say you're going to do that by 2008. Our schools aren't ready, and even more importantly, our students aren't ready. So you have to have a plan between when those go into effect and what does that mean. I would hate to send the districts a message that everything in SIM and CAM is now done, I don't have to do any of that, because that is not what's going to be, that, at least in the tentative plan, that's not the state board's plan in the graduation requirement. So, yes, we will need to go to the legislature on certain specifics regarding the statute, and we would obviously need to explain to the legislature what we are adopting, what we think we're adopting. You then deal with what minimally has to be done, and then you have the option of what else you want to do.
All right, thank you. We're now running a little bit behind, but this is important, so I'm going to keep going. Senator Morse, you have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Have you considered diploma requirements consistent with the pathways chosen by the student, that would be pathways that are available, so that it's not one size fits all? I think you touched on that.
Chair Walker, Senator Morse, the answer is yes. The concept behind the student identifying what he or she wants to go triggers focused learning in the high school that would meet that goal. That's how I perceive it, yes. If we adopted, indeed, I'm only one member, and I want to respect the members of the board, but if we adopted what I'd call a college transfer curriculum as it, that might be curtailed if we did that, because you'd have so many credits to get in, you might not be able to focus on your learning. So I think we know we want students to have focused learning, and we want them to be able to work towards where they want to go. So if we went with giving districts, especially in the math and science, flexibility. Science is not physics. It could be agricultural science, could be computer science, could be whatever, then that would meet what I think you're calling pathways. Mm-hmm. The dilemma we run into is some students will make a pathway decision, and they do it in college now. I mean, they enter in architecture, and then they decide that's not what they want to do, and they have to get other things. It's the same in high school. They may make a nursing decision, so they take a pathway for nursing. They find out they hate it, and then they don't have the Algebra 2. They need to be an architect. So education for students and people is not, you know, just not without decision points that have impact on. But the state board is committed to the concept that to be effective, the high school experience, the K-12 experience, must be relevant for that student, and at the same time, it must be rigorous. We do not want to repeat, you've heard the horror stories of the vocational program where all you did was build the birdcage. That's all you did, and you didn't have skills for the next step. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about rigorous academic performance that meets the student's goals and needs.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Metzger.
Thank you. Just a couple of comments, Mr. Berger. The first one is to compliment the board. I think that, at least in my 9 years of service now in the legislature, that I have not seen a state board with a more aggressive, hands-on, active work in the educational direction of the state. And I really, really appreciate you know, the fact that you guys are grabbing the bulls by the horn of the issues that come before you and realizing that you are that voice and the one that directs that, and your leadership of that. I appreciate that very much. The second point is, and the chair and I have talked about this as well, I do appreciate your comments around SIM and CAM, and I think the one point is very good. Most people don't even know what that means, or even knows that CAM has basically not even got started in most cases. But I, for one, you know, would paraphrase Mark Twain to say that reports of the death of SimCam are premature, despite where they might come from. And I'm not interested in getting rid of the great work that has been done for our students, but rather to retool, as I've heard you say, and say let's keep working and retool our program, not just give our teachers, you know, the next slickest deal for the next 14 years, but to identify our strengths and how they affect performance and learning by students, the challenges that maybe for the best of intentions did not work out well, and make those modifications. So I really appreciate your understanding of that, and look very much forward of working with you so that at the end product produces the results and that all of our children can be successful when they leave the high school environment.
Thank you. And Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And once again, probably more comment than question at this point. Because I like a lot of the things you're saying, and I would suggest that we not talk about the elimination of SIM and CAM, but the modification. It's an easier modification. It's an easier word to deal with. I'm going to be interested in a couple things as you're doing this modification. I'm hoping that we're doing some things that are, for example, going to streamline portfolios so they aren't quite as onerous to teachers as they currently are, because that's one of the biggest complaints you'll get from teachers is they spend too much time doing things that aren't filling in forms and writing reports and that sort of thing. The pathways, I mean, you kind of backed up from where you started on that pathway thing, because quite honestly, I'm 55 and I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. So, you know, to put kids on a track at 16 or 17, it does not make a lot of sense. I guess from my perspective, and when I talk to employers, what they want coming out of our school system is teachable people. And you know, the importance from my perspective in math is that you learn the critical thinking required to do math. And so that's, that's more important than saying you've taken calculus, because if you're going to go into the building trades, you may not need that. So, you know, it's the critical thinking component of both math and science that I think that where the focus needs to be, so that we are sending kids into the workforce that employers can train.
Mr. Berger, I think you've gotten a little indication of where this committee is thinking, of what we're thinking. What would you say, I'd like to invite you back for a very long discussion once you've adopted your new requirements. Would you say that would be something you'd like to do in mid-February, late February, March?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, if we reach agreement on what we think what the graduation requirements ought to be, we would love to come back to explain what we adopted, what the timelines are, what it means regarding statutes, et cetera, so we are together, mm-hmm. and not we're just not out there doing it, and all of a sudden in June someone says this doesn't make any sense, we're going to fight this, because you will get all kinds of input regarding whatever it is we adopt, and we want you to know what we're adopting, what the basis of that, so we would welcome to come back as soon as we will let you know what we do in next week, we reach agreement. If we don't reach agreement, we'll let you know, because it will be on then in the February agenda, and we will keep you informed, and feel free to invite us back to explain that in depth, because it is very, very mm-hmm. important for the students in Oregon.
All right. I will ask that the committee administrator stay in touch with you then. I do have a meeting this afternoon with other committee education chairs from the House and the Ways and Means folks, so that we all have some understanding about where we're headed for education for Oregon. And I'll mention that we've had this discussion this morning. And before you leave, I do want to compliment you as well. Senator Metzger made a very good point. When I took over as chair of the Education Committee last session, I was shocked to find out that the State Board and the Higher Ed Board were not meeting as required by statute. They weren't really working together. I felt there was some real effort on the governor's part to change that, on the board's part to change that, and I have seen it, and I'm very, very impressed. Senate Bill 342 is something that I worked on with Senator Schrader last session. I'm very pleased to see the outcome of that, and we knew that was going to be a real bonus for kids to get them through the process and make sure they're not spending their money and spinning their wheels for something that didn't make any sense. So thank you. Thank you very much for your time and your dedication, and thank you for appearing today, and we look forward to seeing you again.
Thank you very much.
All right. Okay, colleagues, we're going to move on next now to the State Board of Higher Education. We'll have the Chancellor, George Pernsteiner, come up, and Tony Van Vliet, one of the board members and a former member of this building.
Thank you, Chair Walker, members of the committee. For the record, my name is George Pernsteiner. I'm the Chancellor of the Oregon University System, and I'm joined today by one of our board members, Tony Van Vliet, who is also active in the joint board's work. Whenever I come to speak about education, I think about my own children. I suppose that's not unusual, but it helps me frame what we're looking towards over the next 20 years. And part of what Tony will speak about is the next 20 years, because that's really what our board is focused on right now. But as you think about the changes that are happening throughout this country and throughout the world in terms of educational attainment, you can see that the currency of the realm for the 21st century will, in fact, be education. And education levels throughout the world are rising at a time when the education levels of the Oregon workforce actually are not. One of the things that came back that sort of hit me between the eyes during the past session, or during this past interim, was that our older workforce has more education, as measured by associate degrees, baccalaureates, and higher, than do the younger members of our workforce. And that's unusual in the world. Mm-hmm. And what that suggests to us is that if our residents, our citizens, are to be competitive in the 21st century, we have to find a way to increase the level of education for Oregonians. And all of what we're going to talk about today and probably during the session, both in terms of what we say from the university system, what the community colleges will say, and really what Dr. Berger and others from the Board of Education will say, will relate to making Oregon students and Oregon residents successful in that 21st century. All of what we're doing, all of what Dr. Berger talked about before, is really focused on that purpose. We're doing it in order to create a civically and economically viable citizenry. And I wanted to kind of say that because I think about my own son, who's 19, who gets phone calls in the Safeway store in Portland. He's a student at PSU. And the whole conversation is in Mandarin. He speaks Mandarin. All of his friends who are around the world, most of them in Asia, do so similarly. That's the world that our kids are growing into. That is really the challenge that we all face in education, is to broaden and deepen the educational attainment of our citizens. Having said that, which is kind of scary, let's talk about the good news for a minute. Our enrollment in the university system is above 81,000 students. It's the highest it's ever been. It's not up as much as we'd hoped it would be, but it is still a record. The diversity of our student body, 14%, one out of every seven students, is a student of color. That number will have to rise over time as the demography of this state changes and as we try to make certain that all Oregonians have an opportunity to participate and succeed in a 21st century society. But at 14%, that too is the highest percentage that we've ever had in our student body. We awarded more than 19,000 degrees and certificates last year. Again, the highest ever. And we accepted more than 630,000 credit hours in transfer from Oregon's community colleges in 2005. That's significant because it says that our educational enterprise is not just the universities or the community colleges in isolation. In fact, this is an enterprise that involves all 24 institutions trying to focus on student success. I'm happy to report that this past year, our faculty garnered about $300 million in externally funded research. That's significant because it makes them, on a per faculty member basis, among the most productive in the country in terms of getting other people to say, the work you are doing is so important that we will pay for it. So we have a very high-quality faculty, and they are doing very good work. And we're rebuilding the faculty. I told you last time that we had fewer faculty than we did in 1995. We've actually added a couple hundred faculty over the last 2 years. I think that's a significant improvement. It's, you know, we're not back to where we were in any of the prior biennia, but by golly, we've made progress. But there are some warning signs. We have a smaller incoming undergraduate class from Oregon, both from the high schools and from the community colleges. That's of concern to us. So the fact that we have a record enrollment is because we have people from out of state coming in record numbers. That helps us financially. It helps ultimately the state in some ways, because about 80% of our graduates stay right here in Oregon once they finish, regardless of where they come from. But it is of concern if our focus is to try to bring up the education level of Oregonians. So it's something that we are particularly concerned about.
Well, Chancellor, let me interrupt you there, because you can interpret that two ways. You can interpret that as people in Oregon, graduates from high school, are not going on to college, or you can interpret it that they're leaving Oregon to go to school elsewhere. So do you have some numbers that can tell us where what that is?
We do, and it's both. For the first time since the mid-90s, the rate of students leaving the state to go to school out of state climbed significantly last year. It had been actually declining for some time. We've been able to attract more and more of the students here. But what happened last year is both the rate going out of state went up and the rate going anywhere went down. And that's the concern. So it's a two-edged concern that we're focused on right now. And that's so part of what we're talking about in the investments that will come before the Senate and the House in the budget begin to deal with some of those particular issues, both of those issues.
And do we know why these students are going out of state? It's not just the weather.
No, they did it before the snows came, but... No, we're still looking at that. Some indicate it's the price, and we're going to talk about affordability in a little while. Some indicate it is the question of the sort of the stability of program. One of the things we're continuing to do, six of our campuses cut budgets coming into this year. Three more are cutting budgets right now going into next year. There has been, for some time, question about the stability of some of the institutions financially, and that gets transmitted. And one of our hopes is that we can signal that the 07-09 biennium starts a rebuilding of opportunity and hope, and so that we can begin to reverse that. But there are a lot of factors involved in student decisions. Some of them choose to go out of state because they want to get away from home. I understand that. But we've always had that. I don't worry so much about that as I do about the change in the percentages, you know, rather than one individual student deciding to go out of state. In the aggregate, what are students deciding to do?
Okay. Thank you.
But that to me is of some concern. So we have a lower participation rate. I mentioned the campus budget cuts and the financial fragility of some of our campuses. We still have faculty salaries that are around 14% below the national average. We still have higher than average by a lot student-faculty ratios, and we have a deferred maintenance backlog of about $650 million across the system. So all of those were the warning signs coming into this biennium. Again, the focus of the system and of the universities and of all of education in Oregon is success, the success of Oregonians and success for Oregon. And we measure that in participation and in degrees. And so we want to continue to increase the participation rate of Oregonians in post-secondary education and increase the number of degrees. And we have a three-pronged approach to deal with that. And the first one, Dr. Berger really talked about, and that's alignment with the K-12 and alignment with the community colleges. The focus there is on student success. One of the things that I think Senate Bill 342 did is to provide and help us provide clarity to students about the pathways to degree. More than anything else, that's what we need to provide in that regard. Make it clear, once the students know what to do, they can do it, but they've got to know what to do. And we have to make that clearer, and we have to get unneeded barriers out of the way. Dr. Berger talked about the Oregon Transfer Model module. He talked about advanced placement. He talked about the outcomes-based general education. What he didn't mention is the system we're putting in that you saw demonstrated in the last session, Atlas, that allows students and their advisors actually online to call up their student records, figure out what counts for what at each of the 24 institutions, and then what's scheduled where. That's something Portland State has in place. The University of Oregon's bringing it up. We brought it up in on a trial basis to some of the high schools other institutions recently. I got confused with IDTS. That came up with some of the high schools last week. Our hope is that can be used by students and by their advisors in order to move students through the degree more effectively. There's also investment in the governor's budget, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on that, but one of the focus areas is on affordability, because we mentioned before that may have been one of the barriers to students continuing to in college in Oregon. In the governor's budget is money in the Oregon Student Assistance Commission to increase the opportunity grant through the shared responsibility model. It's of utmost importance for affordability for students. But one of the things that has to be tied to that is not making, you know, if you're going to make it more affordable, you can't raise the price faster than you're raising the grant aid. So one of the things that our board did was to limit the increase in tuition to the rate of growth in Oregon median family income. The two really have to be viewed together as a package in order to increase and improve affordability. The governor's recommended budget deals with the faculty salary, the student-faculty ratio, the regional campus stabilization and financial fragility issues, capital repair and maintenance, which I think is very, very important with that deferred maintenance backlog. There's also focus on certain workforce areas, such as the Engineering Technology Investment Council's increase and also increases for the healthcare workforce. There's also some money in there to begin, and this is very important, I think, if you're going to improve high school to college transition, to improve access for rural Oregonians to go to college. Bringing our staff and faculty into the high schools, working with students and their families on a consistent basis in communities, that's the way that you instill in students that they do have an opportunity, that this can be in their choice set, that they can find a way to go to college when they finish high school. That's an important part, I think. It's a small initiative, but I think it's an important initiative as we go forward. There's a lot of focus also on research in the Oregon Inc. budget, but I think at that point I'm going to stop and say all of this is in the context of a 20-year plan, trying to make a difference for Oregonians over the next 20 years in collaboration with the community colleges and K-12. And Tony Van Vliet is going to speak a little bit about that.
Thank you very much. I'll be 97 when this plan is completed. And I hope I can come back and say, by cracky, we did it right.
I do too, Mr. Van Vliet.
At any rate, one of the things that we started out was very aggressively looking at, through a retreat process, what needed to be done in the next 20 years in higher education. The same kind of things that we are they're no doubt looking at the Department of Education also. And I would like to put in a word that the Joint Board has been an exciting group to work on. And it's been an exciting group to work on with Jerry and several members of the State Board of Education, as well as several of our members, because of a very aggressive staff, some of which are here today, that kept pushing us in the direction of working. And you had Senate Bill 342 as the driving force. And I think for the first time in all the years that I have seen, people at all the educational levels are talking together. And we don't always agree, but we do come together and deal with some of these important issues. The State Board of Higher Education has looked very dramatically at what we have within our system that we have to work with. And dealing with a system that was created in 1933 under very strict rules of what institutions would be doing what, we now are dealing with a rapidly changing society where everybody moves very quickly from different types of curriculums. If something is hot on the radar screen, somebody wants to put in a new program. The danger in that is that you get a mission, what we call mission creep. So we have to go into somewhat we call mission control system as we look at the sustainability of the system. So as we have looked at this for the next 20 years, it is in sort of a portfolio measure, which some of our folks in the board like to call it, but it is also looking very seriously at what these institutions are doing and how are we meeting the students' needs as they are coming in and looking at new avenues of advancement and new avenues of education. And that's a tough job. Higher education basically is a battleship that gets turned very slowly, as you well know. We're turning it more rapidly now because we have more tugboats pushing it on one side. And so we're having to look at it very quickly as these rapid changes come in. So that is basically what we're looking at is the 20-year plan. Now, as we progress down there, besides working with our colleagues on both sides of the educational fence, we have to look at the dynamics of the changes that are going on in Oregon. And Oregon is becoming a state that I've watched grow from 2.5 when I entered the legislature in 1975 to over 3.5 million people. To come back to your question, many of those people are coming in from out of state, consequently have allegiances to other universities through their parents and become legacies. So that's one aspect. Other, we're looking at a societal division in income. We have more haves and have-nots. And with that particular area, you have people now that are able to look at sending their children to the Harvards and the Yales and the MITs and somehow bypass the excellence that's on some of the campuses. Now, if you ever have a chance to read the Chronicle of Higher Education, I suggest you look at this issue. This is one that how faculties measure up. It is a little bit like the U.S. News Report beauty contest, but at the same time it has some deep-seated things that we should be concerned about that's happened to higher education since 1991. In here, 104 programs on university campuses are rated. We are not in any of those. Then they took the top 24 programs, things like accounting, engineering, psychology, education, and took the top 10 in each of those categories. Only one program in the state of Oregon shows up in this chronicle, Ag Economics at Oregon State. We are off the radar screen in the rest of them. Now, that shows that we have suffered the same thing as the entire educational system in the state of Oregon since Ballot Measure 5 came in. That is that we've been on a roller coaster in the funding aspect. This time we're looking at a budget for the first time, and we thank the governor for it, that is going to get us on the pathway to that 20-year plan. At the same time, when you get an infusion like that, you've been hanging up by your arms in the cell, starved, ribs, eye sockets back in, and somebody brings you now in a full meal. You have to be careful how you digest that meal because it'll kill you otherwise. So what we've got to do now is make sure sustainability is what our prime concern is as we move forward with the infusion that we're going to get and maintain the fact that we've got to take care of the students and keep tuition down, because if you look at the budget, in 1991, when we budgeted higher education, it is almost identical to what was budgeted in general fund in your last legislative session. That means in 15 years, the difference had to be picked up someplace else. It was picked up by student tuition, and it was picked up by research grants and federal money. Without those, we have no local property taxes to support us, so we have to do it strictly on general fund, tuition, and grants, and our prestige. So there's where we go, and as we look at the portfolio, we move in that direction with a very, very outstanding board that's really engaged and a very good joint board that's working very hard to make sure that everybody's talking together at the same time. Open it up for questions.
Committee, any questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you. Not a question, but just a follow-up elaboration on Mr. Van Vliet's statement about funding. Since Measure 5 adjusted for inflation and population of students in OUS, funding has declined 36% in the last 16 years. Those are legislative fiscal numbers. Support.
I think Senator Moore said it very succinctly.
Hope I didn't scare those other two senators.
No, and both Senator Morris and I look forward to seeing you gentlemen down in Ways and Means as we discuss that budget, and we hope that we see that continued investment. I hope to see both of you back, should we have some policy issues that we need to deal with, and appreciate your service, Senator, Mr. Van Vliet, and Chancellor Pernsteiner. I really appreciate you coming.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we're running a little bit behind schedule, but I think we're going to catch up. And next up we have the Oregon Department of Education with Superintendent of Public Instruction, Susan Castillo. Come forward, please.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and Senator Morse. Susan Castillo, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction for the State of Oregon. I am very pleased to be here in your first meeting of this session, and I just want to thank you, Senator Walker, for your leadership and service to our state. And I and the department are looking forward to working with you this session and on the many important issues that we're going to be talking about, especially as there's such a feeling of optimism about this session. It's really a nice feeling. I also just wanted to say that I know that in your jobs as state senators, having been a former member, that one of the most important things you need is really good information and to help you with all the many decisions that you need to make this session. And please do not hesitate to contact us. We are here to help you with whatever you need and hope that we can help you throughout the session and work together on addressing all the issues that I know that you're going to be focused on. In the testimony that I've provided, I provided you with a list of the senior staff at the department and a brief summary of each of the 15 bills that our agency has put forward this session. When I first came to office 4 years ago, you all remember that it was a very, very difficult time in our state. We were in the middle of the recession, and our districts were slashing positions and programs and cutting school days, and class sizes were going up and up. And while I don't wish to have that time on our schools ever again, I do believe that there were many lessons learned, and that today, because of that very difficult time, our schools stepped up and provided lots of innovative ways of working with those very difficult budgets. And I believe that today our schools are smarter and tougher and more efficient and more focused on getting the job done for kids. We can say that we're seeing student performance in reading, writing, math, and science rising, even under these very difficult times. And we can confidently state that we are closing the achievement gap. We're not where we want to be by any means, but the trends are overwhelmingly positive. And with the brightening economic outlook and a commitment to reinvesting in our schools and our children, I feel very good about the governor's proposed $6.06 billion budget for our schools. But you can also expect me to be talking with you and all of your colleagues about trying to raise that final dollar to up to 6.3. If we can manage that this session, we can start really rebuilding budgets. I can't begin to talk about the work of the department without just taking a moment to acknowledge the hard work and dedication and professionalism of the talented men and women who serve the students and educators of our state. Because without their commitment and educational excellence, we would not be able to celebrate our successes and face the coming challenges with such confidence. The department began reorganizing in 2004 around a set of three core functions: accountability, leadership, and school improvement. And since we began that work, we have reorganized the Office of the Superintendent, we've enhanced our support for the State Board of Education, and we've reduced top-level management positions. And most recently, we have reorganized to improve data collection and analysis by implementing changes in three key offices. And these changes are going to more closely align personnel and their areas of expertise and improve our ability to deliver quick responses to you and stakeholders during the legislative session, which ultimately, of course, helps our students. And an important project that we have going on right now is the review of our assessment system and our assessment standards. The U.S. Department of Education, under No Child Left Behind, requires states to submit our testing system to peer review, and ours was found to be in need of a tune-up. So right now, across the state, educators and members of the general public are reviewing Oregon's achievement standards for reading, math, and science, and the result will be scores that are more accurate for students in grades 3 through 8 and in high school. And then earlier I shared my admiration for my staff at ODE. Well, each budget cycle, we have been asked to do more with less and yet continue to perform at a high level. And that's why I am so pleased that the governor's budget also includes reinvesting not only in just K through 12, but reinvesting in the department's ability to deliver support and data and technical assistance to our schools and educational professionals to ensure student success. We are in an era of increased accountability and limited resources, and the governor's recommended budget includes money to fund critical policy option packages that acknowledge the demand for the best information available. And those include funding for the department to create a new model for assessing academic growth at the student, school, and district level. You've probably heard it referred to as the growth model. And as you know, we have submitted a plan to the federal government asking that we use this growth model as part of how we calculate adequate yearly progress under the requirements of No Child Left Behind. They have not approved our approach, and so we are going to forge ahead because we believe it is best practice. And we have the support of everyone in the education system to move forward. Our schools are very supportive of this being accomplished, which will help us have a better way of measuring how our students are doing in our school. And so we will make it work for Oregon, and we believe that after we demonstrate how this is a much better way of measuring student performance, that the federal government will eventually say yes to Oregon. The other option, the other part of our budget that we feel is going to help move us forward on data is the implementation of the project called Kids Phase 3. Thank you very much to the legislature for your investment in helping us make the last step forward on this project last session and your investment in that. And this continues the next phase of that. It will centralize and standardize student records and reduce redundancies and inefficiencies and provide for a more timely exchange of records when students transfer. So we very much look forward to continuing to talk about that investment and what that project means for the students in our state. And then money for the department to develop assessment literacy trainings to improve the ability of education professionals to understand the relevance of assessment results, especially as we make these changes to our assessments, or our standards, rather. We know that when our educators are trained and have the expertise on how to use the testing data, then they are better able to help our students be successful. The other funding package that we also would love to get your support on is to improve student literacy and ensure that funds are available to develop and disseminate high-quality literacy trainings for Oregon's administrators and teachers. We have been doing a lot of work in this area, and especially in the, well, throughout all grades, but we have had a growing focus on adolescent literacy for our middle school and high school students, and that work is really placing us as one of the national leaders in our country on the work that we're doing on adolescent literacy, and we would love to be able to make more progress on that. And so then in addition to the K-12 funding, the other policy priorities for us are around strengthening the high school diploma. And you heard the chair of our state board talk about the work that they're focusing in on right now. Across this country, all states are looking at their high school diploma, and we know in Oregon that we have really been falling behind on the level of rigor that we have been asking of our students. And so as we have taken a look at the high school experience and through our school improvement work and with the leadership of the governor and our state board, we know that we need to raise the rigor of the high school diploma. And so doing that, we have a bill that takes a look at that alters the current law that created CIM and CAM, the certificates of initial mastery and certificate of advanced mastery in place. And those certificates have been groundbreaking work in the state of Oregon and across this country. When they were passed back in the 90s, we received national attention for what we've been doing in that, because they really were about setting high standards for students and creating ways for our students to have a more relevant learning experience. We want to continue that best practice, and that's what the high school diploma work is about. But it takes it further than what CIM and CAM has done, because for CIM and CAM, they have not been mandatory for all students. And as a result, only about a third of our students today get a CIM. We want Oregon to move ahead and have a diploma and have expectations in our state that say we want all students to reach high levels of achievement and to reach our standards, not just some. And that's what this diploma work is about. So moving us forward in our state and having higher expectations for all students. And at the core of that raising the rigor, as you heard the chair mention to you, is raising the rigor of our expectation on the level of math and science in our high schools. And right now the board is still deliberating and deciding where they're going to land on those decisions. But we're very excited about that work and do believe that by taking those steps that we will better prepare our students for the global economy in the 21st century. And so we will definitely be working with you on that work. We believe that we can't afford to delay because 20 states have already raised standards and another dozen are in the process. So I applaud, as I said, the work of the state board to move forward and to take action on creating a system that works for our schools and our teachers and, most importantly, for our students and their futures. In the area of early learning, I am a firm believer in the importance of getting children off to a strong start. And all the scientific research tells us that the early years from birth to five are absolutely critical to brain development, and that every dollar we spend on children when they're 3 or 4 or 5 years old is money that's going to generate a phenomenal return. But as you already know, our Head Start preschool programs are forced to turn away hundreds of low-income families because they don't have enough spots for everyone who qualifies. So the governor's budget does include money to make Head Start available to all families who qualify. And I will be working hard with you and all the other strong supporters of that proposal. And I also want to applaud your work, because I know the Senate Commission on Educational Excellence has been doing work to help us within this area as well. So thank you for your leadership on the early learning piece of all of this as well. And I know that that commission also is supporting full-day kindergarten or looking at how we can expand access to full-day kindergarten. We know by investing in our children in full-day kindergarten that we can better prepare them for success in first grade. So we have been expanding access to full-day kindergarten during these last few years. We have increased the full-day kindergarten classes have increased from 3,700 children in full-day to 6,000 children now are in full-day. But we really need to expand that to everywhere in the state as much as we can. There is strong data and evidence that right here in Oregon to support full-day kindergarten, but that the majority of elementary schools can't afford more than half-day programs because Oregon is one of only 12 states that actually discourages full-day kindergarten by how we fund it. We just so one option that I'm asking you to consider this session is to move this agenda forward to change the school funding formula and give districts the opportunity to offer full-day kindergarten. If a district offers a full day, then they should get full weight funding in the state funding formula. It would not be a mandate, but would provide full day funding for those who want to move in that direction. I'm very supportive of the mentoring proposals that have mentoring in general for our educators. We have not certainly done enough in this area, and I know the governor has included $5.5 million in his budget to help new teachers and new administrators be successful. We know that we absolutely need to invest more in our workforce, and so I am very supportive of seeing us make progress in helping especially our new teachers and administrators be successful in our schools. So I look forward in working together with you on being able to invest there and make some progress in that arena and as you look at the various proposals before you. I'm also very supportive on the efforts to deliver more accountability from our schools. One of the positives of tough economic times is we often are forced to change the way that we do business, and certainly that has been the case for us at the Department of Education. We've tightened the reins and netted more than $2 million in savings and efficiencies, and we're going to continue to look closely at alternative programs and other ways to streamline state policies so that districts don't have to cut through red tape to get the job done. And this session, I will continue to work with education stakeholders to pursue legislation to ensure more performance and financial audits of school districts around the state. I know that there are several proposals this session that are being put forward, and my hope is that we all can agree on how we can move forward and make progress in that area. I believe it's really important for the taxpayers to see that we're taking all of those steps forward to deliver more accountability and to ensure that all of their tax dollars are being spent in the best possible way to help kids. We know that this session there is a feeling of optimism as we're all looking at better times in our state budget. And my message to our schools is really going to be that we need to make sure that as we get this reinvestment, that we deliver big time for our state, for our students, and that as you make these reinvestments in our schools, that we have, that we deliver to you better results for students and that we continue to see progress in our schools at all levels. I am very excited that we have so many various partners and proposals all coming forward, whether it's from Stand for Children or Chalkboard or the legislature, lots of partners coming forward to help move us forward. And as I take a look at all of the various proposals that are before you this session, I do believe that, you know, all of them really are an attempt to move our schools forward and to help us make progress in key areas that we absolutely need to continue to focus on and make progress on. So I look forward to working with you on how we can make a lot of those things happen, hopefully.
Well, thank you, Superintendent. I really appreciate your very thorough testimony about your plans for the session. I anticipate that we'll see your proposals in this committee and also downstairs. In, I say downstairs, we're already downstairs, but you always think of Ways and Means as downstairs in the basement.
Same level.
It's all on the same level, but they're downstairs. Anyway, we will see your proposals there as well. Do any of the committee members have just questions of the overview, or do you want to hold them until we get into more detail? Comments?
No,
okay.
Madam Chair, just
yes,
one,
sir.
Superintendent, actually two. One based on your testimony, and I would just suggest, I mean, I'm absolutely a supporter of fully funding Head Start. The only issue I have with kindergarten is if you're just looking at kindergarten with what you proposed, it's, you almost set up a rich get rich and the poor stay poor scenario, because there's a lot of schools, especially small rural districts, that don't have the infrastructure necessary to go to full K. And so unless we address the capital issues at the same time, I don't think we're getting a look at the whole picture there. So I just wanted to put that on the record, and I've said that more than once before. But to penalize or to reward a school that has the ability and not give a school that doesn't have the ability the resources necessary to do the infrastructure changes is an inequity, I think. And the other thing, Madam Chair, is from when this has been bugging me since you, Superintendent Castillo, when you spoke at Roseburg, and because you made a comparison to, I think it was China, and the education system there and the excellence of their education. And, you know, we're kind of comparing apples and oranges here to a degree, because whereas we have mainstreamed a whole lot of kids, which has created some difficulties for teachers to teach. You go to a country like China and they take their top 10%, educate them, and ignore the rest. And so, it, you know, we need to be mindful of the fact that we aren't looking at level playing fields here. So, That's bothered me for a long time, and I'm glad I had a chance to say
I'm glad you had a chance to get that out, Senator Cruz.
I appreciate that, too, Madam Chair and Senator Cruz. Thank you. I really appreciate that. Let me take the kindergarten one first. I absolutely agree with you. We do not want to create an unlevel situation for districts, so I look forward to working with you on how we can find solutions for those districts who do have the capital needs and want to do full-day kindergarten but, don't have the space or facilities and are going to need some help and support. And absolutely, I'm very committed to working with you on how we address that issue. On China, my comments have been about what I saw there and the incredible investments that China is making to produce, very high levels of achievement in their students there. You're absolutely right. I think we should be very proud that here in the United States we're about all kids and that we educate all children. Our doors are open to everyone, and that is our goal, and that should be our goal. And we should take pride in the fact that that is what we do in our public schools. Yes, that does present us with some challenges, but aside from that, I think we're in a time where we absolutely need to change how we look at what we do in our public schools in terms of preparing our students for a very different world than when we went to school. We know it's going to be constantly changing at even a more rapid pace, and we know that for so many professions where all you needed was a high school diploma, or for many people not even getting a high school diploma and could still go out and get a good paying job and support their families, those days are gone. And if we are going to prepare our students for success and for being able to compete in a world economy now, not just compete here within our state or in the Northwest or even in our country, but to compete on a global scale, because that is what they're going to be facing, then we need to step up and do a better job to prepare them for that. And that means whatever they're going to do, whether they're going to go straight from high school into the workforce or from high school into a community college or higher education. And that's why in our high school work, we're partnering so much with community colleges and higher ed. We all know that we have got to change, how we look at moving our students through our systems and making sure that they are prepared and that they graduate with skills that are going to prepare them for whatever changes, are in store for them ahead. We just think about how our life has changed in the last 10 years. Think of how cell phones have changed our lives and all kinds of other ways that technology has changed. Well, the prediction is that in the next 10 years, there's even going to be more rapid change that we can't even see now. And if we do our job well, we can help our students be prepared for whatever those changes are. So it's really about that. It's about recognizing what's happening in China and India and all over the world right now, as everyone is seeing that global competition now is really requiring everyone to look at higher skill levels and higher and a body of knowledge that's going to prepare our students for that. And that's what we need to be focused on and really move forward on. And so... we have had high standards in our schools, and we can be very proud of the standards that we currently have, but they've only been for some students. Today, that's been, has been so frustrating for all of us as we've been working on SIM and CAM and trying to help more students be able to achieve that high level of achievement. And as hard as we've been working on it, and there's been great success in some parts of our state, but now we need to change our way of thinking about that and say, how do we create a school system that helps all students get to that higher level of achievement? And that's what the high school diploma work is about, and the work today as we talk about our system of PK through 20. It's all about raising the bar for everyone forcing us to think about how we deliver better for our students to help them be prepared.
Thank you, Superintendent. I appreciate your testimony
today.
Colleagues, it is 10:15, and we're supposed to close the hearing. I'm happy to go until 10:30 because I'd very much like to hear that from the governor's office. If you don't have an objection, I was going to try to squeeze in the community colleges today. I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm so sorry, Andrea. Can you come back on Tuesday and we'll give you your full time That'd be great. I don't think your time was wasted today listening, but I do appreciate it. So, Mr. Sager, if you could come forward and take us home to 10:30, because I have an appointment with the Secretary of State at 10:30, so we will have to conclude by then.
Yeah, you can. He'll wait for you.
Yes, he will. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Walker, members of the committee. For the record, James Sager from the Governor's Office. And if I might, let me start off by also thanking Chairs Berger from the State Board of Ed and Chair Lorenzen from the State Board of Higher Ed and all the board members, staff, Superintendent Castillo, Commissioner Preuss-Brawley, and Chancellor Pernsteiner. I mean, this has just been a phenomenal 18 months of collaboration and cooperation within the education enterprise. And so I'm... In addition to the reasons that many of us are very excited about this legislative session, I have an added excitement just because of the kind of energy that is coming from the education community, both inside and then all the advocacy groups that have joined us. Just as a quick little background before I walk you through the points on this piece of paper, I guess I could have started the presentations today wrapping up here at the end. I really want to pull all this together and highlight a few of the things that others have said. You're going to hear a lot of repetition in what I'm going to say because there has been this collaboration, including the fact that the governor's budget was driven by policy decisions made jointly by the boards, by the different education sectors, so that, in fact, this isn't a situation where we have 3, 4, 5 different silos of ideas that all sound good and interesting, but these ideas are woven together so that you can't peel off one without damaging another, so that there's a logic behind the foundation that we're trying to build during this legislative session to build for future sessions. And I'll come back to that at the end as I kind of wrap that up, but I wanted to give you that kind of background. So very quickly running through these as far as priorities for the governor, clearly fully funding Head Start. We know from the research that this is a 17-to-1 return on investment. There's a great deal of community and business support for providing this opportunity to level the playing field for all of our children so that they can enter the traditional education system prepared and ready to learn. And we need to provide that opportunity for Oregon youth. Which then clearly leads into the whole K-12 system. The governor wants to restore many of those core programs that, because of tight budgets and budget cuts, schools have had to make very difficult decisions to eliminate programs like PE and music and art. And those aren't traditional academic programs, but we know that they are vital to student success. They are what keep students engaged. They're what expand their understanding and application of math and reading and enjoyment of the world. And so we need to make sure that we provide those programs for students throughout the system. And also reducing class size, but boosting performance. We have a quality education model in this state that we should be very proud of. And so in developing the budget and the programs and the policies to drive this, that is what we looked at, that it isn't a matter of simply putting more dollars in. It's how we put those dollars in and making sure that those dollars are tied to programs that research shows is going to be best, the first best investment for children throughout the system. You've heard a lot today about the high school graduation requirement, and again, the governor is very pleased that the state board is wrestling with this. It is not an easy decision, as you've heard the testimony earlier. But again, the governor wanted to make sure that this wasn't just an exercise in discussing those tough topics, but making sure that we put the resources behind those decisions so that, again, our educators, our administrators, our support staffs in the schools actually have the resources that they're going to need to carry out this. We can't, as Chair Berger mentioned, you can't just throw the switch and suddenly things change. We need to make sure that we do this right, that we set the policies, and then we put the resources behind those efforts. And you heard from Chancellor Pernsteiner the effect that we have a decreasing number of Oregon youth going on to post-secondary. part of the governor's plan includes making sure that we do a much better effort in connecting with first-generation youth in this state to begin to open their eyes to the fact that not only academically, but financially, they can afford to go on to a post-secondary experience. It doesn't have to be a four-year college degree. It can be a professional technical certificate. It can be whatever it is that prepares them for a better life, a family wage job, et cetera. But we need to be able to reach back into our middle schools and our high schools and make that connection with our youth. One of the very wonderful programs that we have in the state that we're recommending that we expand is the Aspire program, which does, in fact, reach back into the high schools and provide guidance to first-generation students who have never filled, you know, don't have any family background filling out FAFSA reports and understanding what all the paperwork you have to do and why do I have to turn in this material and what the effect is. And so we're really trying to merge, again, good outreach with the kinds of resources and things that students need. And we do need to always, despite the fact that we have had tremendous budget cuts and we know that the education system, pre-K through 20, has really tightened their belt, you can always ask yourself, is there something more we can do without diminishing quality? So we have to make sure that we maintain quality while we look at how we might be able to do things differently. Two of the items that we highlight here are performance audits, number one, where, again, we can help our, not just our K-12 districts, but community colleges and universities look at business practices and say, are there better ways that we can do this? And how can we share those best practices? Those really make sense. And also, in starting the statewide insurance pool, where, in fact, as a state, we can help bring value and free up resources to our system. We'll get into this more when the issues come up specifically, but we continue to receive reports and studies from across the country indicating that the 5% savings projection that we have talked about in the governor's office is extremely conservative, and that, in fact, we might even be able to find additional savings that, again, frees up dollars for the classroom and for the benefit of students. And we need to remove that financial barrier, and it ties back to the Aspire program, but clearly the governor's plan for the shared responsibility model. For the first time, not only would we be expanding the amount of assistance that we provide the most needy students in the state, because one of the things that we've discovered is even though we've improved the opportunity grant, we still, for many of the most needy Oregonians, have not provided enough of assistance that they can make it work for them. So we need to increase the assistance we provide the most needy Oregonians. But we also have a large population of Oregonians that are just beyond the kind of cliff that we have in our system, where if your family or you make more than $31,000, you don't get any assistance. And so the shared responsibility model lays out a plan where every Oregonian should be able to look at it and say, the financial barrier is gone for me because now we have a plan in place to make sure that the state is a partner with you in your efforts and you can pursue a post-secondary education. That, we believe, is going to be a tremendous asset for Oregon and for Oregonians. But if we encourage more people to go, we have to make sure that, in fact, our post-secondary system has the ability to accept students. So, again, the governor is very focused on expanding the support for our community colleges, and not just for the community colleges, not just in their part of the continuum for the traditional kind of lower division classes transferring to the university system, but really helping them reinvest in the professional technical or career technical education programs. Community colleges are so vital for both the traditional pipeline student moving through the system, but also for that student who either on a traditional track or the adult learner who now wants to come back and advance their learning, change careers to get that kind of technical training that they need in order to remain competitive in the workforce and thus keep Oregon competitive. So a lot of focus has been given to our post-secondary system as to how we can secure their structures and help invest again strategically so that they can expand those opportunities for Oregonians. You heard a lot about the program alignment. So, again, I keep kind of bouncing back and forth between budget and policy because these things are so connected. I mean, we just can't talk about them in isolation. And so that's why all this alignment work that has taken place over the last 18 months and that we plan to continue over the next 18 years is so important that there's this connection, that we recognize that, yes, we have financial barriers, we have structural issues of financial support we need to give, but then that also leads to these programmatic decisions, policy decisions that are being made, and in fact, they work hand in glove. And the same is true then for our university system. You know, the governor has mentioned many times that we could decide as a state to have the foremost K-12 system in the world, but if we have a second-rate post-secondary system, we lose. We lose the research dollars, we lose the opportunity for our students, and we lose our economic competitiveness. So we have included a number of target investments that tie not only with the quality ed model, but they tie with the investments from ETIC, from Oregon Inc., again, merging the economic development components with the need for a strong education system and thus a strong workforce system.
Mr. Sager.
And finally, I'll stop.
Well, only because there's another committee coming in here, and it's 10:30, and you wanted to go through the chart on the back. Can you come back Tuesday and finish your presentation?
I will make sure I hear.
Because I'm actually finding it quite fascinating, and I think the committee would want to hear the rest of it.
Absolutely.
So, and I know you're here.
I'm here.
So, great. Well, we will see you on Tuesday. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you,
committee. And I don't know how we're going to get this done in an hour and 45 minutes, but we're going to sure try. We might start earlier in the morning. All right. Well, we are going to close for the day. Thank you all for your participation. We're adjourned.